The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a liberal, welcoming faith community dedicated to exploring new paths to kindness and spiritual growth. And on behalf of the worship committee and the fellowship as a whole, I welcome everyone joining us this morning, whether in person or online. Whoever you are, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, we welcome you and invite you to join us in worship this 4th of July weekend, 2022. I suspect for many of us, this year's celebration of the birth of our democratic republic is tinged with some measure of sadness and disappointment, if not pure outrage. Thanks to the January 6th House Select Committee hearings, we're learning in more stunning detail just how close we came at the beginning of last year to losing our democratic republic because of conspiratorial efforts by right-wing extremist cabals and a sitting president determined to hold on to power at any cost, whether to truth, justice, or even human life. We've also seen the highest court in the land morph into what you could describe as an ideology-driven juggernaut focused on undermining separation of church and state, voting rights, civil rights, reproductive rights, transgender rights, even the right to life for most of us who just want some assurance that we'll be safe from gun violence in our schools, our hospitals, in our places of worship, in our stores, and on our streets. Now, in face of these threats, does Independence Day still hold kind of a special meaning for us, for Unitarian Universalists who affirm and promote principles like our second principle? Justice, equity, and compassion in human right, in human relations. Our fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of democratic process in our congregations and in society at large. And our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. How can we maintain perspectives as we ask ourselves, what kind of country do we live in now? What kind of country should we be living in? Well, sometimes it pays to look back before we look forward to see where we came from, to get a better idea of where we need to go. So on this Independence Day weekend, 2022, we'll look at the origins of our country and their relationship to a faith like ours that's rooted in principles like the three I just mentioned. I got a question for you. What did the Declaration of Independence and the Unitarian movement have in common? Well, actually a lot. Importantly enough, they were both offspring of the intellectual movement that swept Europe in the latter part of the 18th century, the Enlightenment. Right? The Enlightenment fostered ideals of critical reason, intellectual and religious liberty, and the right of self-determination, so critical, self-determination for individuals and for communities, whether they be social communities, political, or religious communities. Helping us to put things in an historical perspective is our astute and accomplished historian, fellowship member, and a cherished friend, Mike Berkheimer. In our readings, our music, and his message, The Egg, we'll look back at the beginnings of this experiment in self-governance and an experiment that we'd like to think of still as the United States of America. I don't know, that's becoming more and more, is it wishful thinking? And we become the United States of America? Well, let's begin worship this morning by lighting our chalice. I'll ask Lorraine Lee to come forward to assist us in lighting our chalice this morning.
Yeah, it's a big stage, but there wasn't quite enough room. Good morning, everyone. The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith. We light our chalice this morning with words by Reverend Deborah Joanne Falk, who retired last year from professional ministry. A chalice lit in our midst is a symbol of our liberal faith, a faith built on the foundation of freedom, reason, and tolerance, a faith sustained by acts of kindness and justice, a faith that visions a world flourishing with equality for all her people, a faith that demands the living out of goodness, a faith that requires thoughtfulness, a faith of wholeness. This tiny flame is the symbol of the spark of all this within each of us.
Thank you, Lorraine. As you see, I've just lit our peace lamp. Please respond, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us. Thank you. Thank you, Lorraine. Now let's sing together our gathering song, Die Gedanken sind frei, My Thoughts Are Free. Now, who better to celebrate the birth of freedom than Pete Seeger, a person committed body and soul to freedom of thought and expression, a person who sacrificed much to fulfill that commitment. You will recall, I'm sure, that he was indicted in 1956 by Senator Joe McCarthy's infamous House on Un-American Activities Committee. While his case was eventually thrown out on appeal, Pete was blacklisted in the entertainment industry for over a decade. Pete will lead us in singing Die Gedanken sind frei. This is hymn number 291 in our hymnal, but the English lyrics that Pete sings in this rendition are not in our hymnal. The origins of them are a little murky, but I believe they are his own take on a translation of the original German text. The lyrics are in the video that will appear on the screen behind me and on your computer screen at home. But please substitute the gender-neutral pronoun one for man in the first two verses, so no one can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei. And substitute free people for and free men in the third and final verse. That rather than say, and free men will cry, just say, free people will cry. I'll try to cue you on that.
Die Gedanken sind frei, my thoughts freely flower. Die Gedanken sind frei, my thoughts give me power. No scholar can map them, no hunter can trap them, no man can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei, no man can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei. I think as I please, and this gives me pleasure. My conscience decrees, this right I must treasure. My thoughts will not cater to duke or dictator. No man can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei, no man can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei. And should tyrants take me and throw me in prison, my thoughts will burst free like blossoms in season. Foundations will crumble and structures will tumble, and free men will cry, Die Gedanken sind frei. And free men will cry, Die Gedanken sind frei.
We don't always include a moment for all ages in our services, but this morning we have such a moment via a musical tribute to the spirit of the American Revolution. It's a schoolhouse rock rendition of the revolutionary era titled The Shot Heard Round the World. And it's performed for us by its composer, Bob Dureau. So enjoy.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
cause knowledge is power.
It's Schoolhouse Rockin', the chip off the block of your favorite schoolhouse rock.
How would you like to hear the shot heard round the world?
The British are coming, the British are coming.
Now the ride of Paul Revere set the nation on its ear, and the shot at Lexington heard round the world. When the British fired in the early dawn, the War of Independence had begun. The die was cast, the rebel flag unfurled, and on to Concord marched the foe to seize the arsenal there, you know, waking folks and searching all around, till our militia stopped them in their tracks. At the old North Bridge we turned them back and chased those redcoats back to Boston town.
And the shot heard round the world was the start of the revolution. The men were ready on the move. Take your powder, take your gun, report to General Washington. Hurry, men, there's not an hour to lose.
Now at famous Bunker Hill, even though we lost, it was quite a thrill. The rebel Colonel Prescott proved he was wise. Outnumbered and low on ammunition, as the British stormed his position, he said, hold your fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Though the next few years were rough, General Washington's men proved they were tough. Those hungry, ragged boys would not be beat. One night they crossed the Delaware, surprised the Hessians in their lair, and at Valley Forge they just bundled up their feet.
Now the shot heard round the world was the start of the revolution. The men were ready on the move. Take your blanket, take your son, report to General Washington. We've got our rights and now it's time to prove.
They showed such determination that they won the admiration of countries across the sea like France and Spain, who loaned the colony ships and guns and put the British on the run, and the Continental Army on its feet again. And though they lost some battles too, the Americans swore they'd see it through. Their raiding parties kept up hit and run. At Yorktown, the British could not retreat. Bottled up by Washington and the French fleet. Cornwallis surrendered, and finally we had won.
Hooray! On the shot heard round the world, through the end of the revolution, the Continental rabble took the day. And the father of our country beat the British there at Yorktown and brought freedom to you and me and the USA. God bless America.
Well, it would seem appropriate that to...
Let me say a few words about that. Oh. I was just, those of you a certain age, Gen Xers might remember those Schoolhouse Rock cartoons on Saturday morning, especially when we were, you know, they would run them during commercials. They would do grammar and so forth. And I do remember that one, though there's a little bit, I always thought it was a little bit off because they make it seem like war is fun. You know, they're running around and doing this. And there's also a big error there. The shot heard around the world is not at the Lexington, as people say. That term also comes from Emerson, which meant the shot fired at Concord Bridge. And if you go back and read what was actually going on there, it's not as heroic because people didn't know what to do. They said, "Will you shoot? No, you. Will you shoot? I don't know what to do." And it was a confusion, and somebody fired, and that started the fighting back. But I do remember being excited when I would see the history ones come on Schoolhouse Rock. Kids still get a kick out of them.
Well, getting back to the beginnings, it might behoove us all to remember what the exact words in the Declaration of Independence were that kind of, how could you put it, marked a milestone in the development of governments. So I'd like to lead you now. Mike will be the leader, and I will lead you in responding. In a responsive reading of the second section of the Declaration of Independence. So the words will be up on the screen. I don't want to block anyone. Can everyone see it? Not blocking your view. All right, Mike.
All right. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights.
That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government.
Laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes.
And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed.
But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security.
Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government.
Big words. Before Mike delivers this morning's message, let's watch a scene from another scene from the film version of the musical 1776. And in this scene, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams ruminate on the hatching of this nation of ours, this egg.
Therefore, the national bird of America is going to be
the eagle.
The eagle.
We're waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp of an eaglet being born. Waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp on this humid Monday morning in this congressional incubator.
God knows the temperature's hot enough to hatch a stone, let alone an egg.
I used to show that quick little song to kids in school, and I'd get them to sing along even, you know, because I had to. So I would say, this humid Monday morning in this congressional, what's the word? Incubator. So I would just every now and then say, congressional. Thank you. So here I am on the 4th of July. Why am I here? Well, because we were going to have an actor portraying Ned Hector, who was a Black Revolutionary War soldier, but we will have him later this month on July 24th. So we needed someone to give this service, and someone asked me what the capital of Bolivia was. And as I thought, before I could get to say La Paz, I got hit on the back of the head, went dark, and I woke up. All of a sudden, I was here on the podium. They needed somebody to give this, so here I am. But I was, in any case, here I am on America's 246th birthday. Now, we all know the basic outlines of this story, but let me just give you a little bit of historical background or set the scene historically what was going on. In April of 1775, the war had started. It wasn't much of a war for a while after Bunker Hill. The British were bottled up in Boston. The Americans were blockading Boston. And it was sort of a stalemate. What eventually happened was Benedict Arnold and Ethan Allen, Benedict Arnold when he was on our side, captured Fort Ticonderoga. And they drug cannons across the mountains to encircle Boston. The British left. We then got confident and thought we could invade Canada and get them to join us. Well, that went okay for a while. We captured Montreal. Then we tried to capture Quebec, and I guess if Dave Perry was here, he could say he could be happy that we failed. We failed capturing Quebec, and we had to retreat. But things were starting to look grim. The British were getting very serious. The Continental Congress had asked George Washington to take command, and they told him, you must defend New York City. New York City at the time was just the bottom of Manhattan. It went from the Battery up to Wall Street. That was the entire city. And they said, to defend New York City was almost impossible, Washington told them, because it's a series of islands. He had to split his men among different islands, and the British started landing troops on Staten Island, getting ready and making a big show of it. Washington said, I thought all of England was afloat. Hundreds of ships, tens of thousands of soldiers. He was writing Congress telling him, I'm not going to be able to hold this city. I need a better position. They said, we can't give up New York City. That's going to lead to unmitigated disasters for America where we almost are destroyed. Defeat after defeat. I know Schoolhouse Rocks makes it look we were winning a lot of battles, but the truth is we were losing almost all the battles. But here I am. While this was going on in Philadelphia, the Second Continental Congress was debating. They sent a olive branch petition to the king saying, if you give up, we'll stay loyal, we'll end this war, if you give up certain authorities over us. Most congressmen said this isn't going to work, but it will at least show that the British aren't negotiating with us. Because according to the British, we were in rebellion against them, and you don't negotiate with rebels. So what was needed was to declare what was in fact true. We were no longer part of the British Empire. We couldn't really go on with this fiction. We're fighting the British. We're killing the British. They're killing us. But we're still saying, God save the king. It didn't make sense. And at this time, Thomas Paine had written that it's common sense that we are an independent country and we can survive as an independent country, as he joined George Washington's army. This book had sold, was a blockbuster bestseller in those terms. Now, to declare independence, Congress wanted it to be unanimous. No colony should be pulled out of, you know, against its will. Well, there was one holdout. Pennsylvania. The large Quaker population had a neutral or loyalist contingent. The main opponent in the Second Continental Congress was John Dickinson of Dickinson College and so forth. He was a Quaker. Now, he had been a man who had spoken against the abuses America had suffered under England, but he thought independence was not the way to go. But eventually, Ben Franklin took him aside and said, look, if you can't vote for this, abstain. Be absent that day. And that way, Pennsylvania did vote. A guy named John Morton, who's not very famous, was the deciding vote for to get Pennsylvania. He lived in what's now Prospect Park. And I used to go see the John Morton house. So I say, the John Morton house, I'll see this. It was a series of telephone poles that people had put together. And there was trash and kids used to go in there and drink and everything. But it was all off on the side of the road. I'm like, oh, okay, not, wasn't what I thought it would be, but that was the John Morton house, who probably should be more famous than he is. So we got unanimous. And on July 2nd, 1776, the Second Continental Congress passed Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, his resolution on independence. It read, resolved that these United Colonies are and of a right ought to be independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. Hooray. John Adams wrote, July 2nd will be a day Americans remember for all time. And that is why we celebrate independence on July 2nd of each year. No? Well, we don't. There's a reason we don't. There's a catch. We don't celebrate July 2nd, we celebrate the 4th. Why? Because Congress had created a committee of five to write a formal Declaration of Independence. This included the main writer, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Ben Franklin, Roger Sherman, and Robert Livingston. Now, we saw at the very beginning of the service, them running around and saying, you should write it, no, you should write it, but Mr. Adams, dear Mr. Adams, and all that nonsense. But the main writer was Thomas Jefferson. Adams and Franklin added their parts to it. Now, I say, as a UU, that this is what we should be celebrating, because the Declaration set out what we should be as a country, what we should be as a society, what we should stand for. There's another anniversary today. Today's July 3rd. 159 years ago today, the Battle of Gettysburg was ending, the third day. Bloodiest battle in North American history. Abraham Lincoln gave a speech at Gettysburg later that year. You know the beginning. Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. 1863, what's a score? It's 20. Fourscore is what? 80 and 7. Someone do the math. 1887. So 1863 minus 87 is 1776. And he also said in that speech, which I memorized as a kid, was that we're fighting for a nation built on these principles, founded on the principle that all men are created equal. Now, this is our founding document. It is Thomas Jefferson's greatest achievement. On his grave, there are 3 things that are listed on his grave. Imagine being the president of the United States, the 3rd president, and not putting that on your grave. The number one thing, the other things were the religious freedom and father of the University of Virginia, but the number one thing is here lies Thomas Jefferson, his first thing he put, author of the Declaration of Independence. He thought it was his greatest achievement. I think it was his greatest achievement. Don't like a lot of the other things he did, but you can visit the Graff House on 7th and Market to see where he wrote the Declaration. I don't know if anyone's ever done that. It's a total it's rebuilding. It looks very, very weird because it's a little row house by a parking lot. So you got this very thin little house standing by itself. You can take tours. They tell you, oh, and this is the room he wrote the Declaration in. Of course, it's not because it's rebuilding. But you can see it. Now, this is a very short little clip here Paul Giamatti playing John Adams and them going over, this is very short, of what they should put in the Declaration.
We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable, that all men are created equal, etc. Sacred and undeniable. Smacks of the pulpit. These truths are self-evident, are they not?
Perhaps.
Self-evident, then. Self-evident?
Self-evident.
Do not mistake me, sir. I share your sentiment.
Every single word was precisely chosen. I assure you of that, Dr. Franklin.
Yes, but yours will not be the only hand in this document. It cannot be. They will try to mangle it, and they may succeed.
There may be expressions which I would not have inserted if I had drawn it up, but I will defend every word of it.
Well, it's what I believe.
This is a marvelous invention, Mr. Jefferson.
Yes, I went through a number of variations. This is by far the most successful. Simplest is always the best.
It's 2 seats, and the top one swivels on rollers made from the window sash pulleys. Oh, most ingenious.
Much of his Jefferson's inventions there. The Declaration was debated. Different parts of it were struck out. As you can see, that part, Franklin didn't want it sounding too churchy. He wanted it to sound very, to use the word self-evident. It was first read publicly at the Pennsylvania State House, now known as Independence Hall, They rang the State House bell, which is now the Liberty Bell, and they read it publicly. Now, most of the declaration is a long list of, so it's only a few pages long. I mean, you could read it fairly short, in a short amount of time. Most of it is a list of abuses done by the king. So he hath kept large standing armies among us. He has done this, that, and the other thing. But that's the part we don't focus on. It's the second paragraph we focus on. And particularly this sentence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is the standard we set for this country. This is what Abraham Lincoln meant when he said he never had a political idea that did not go back to the Declaration of Independence. Now, just so you know, I am not naive. Neither are you. Was Jefferson a hypocrite as a slave owner? Yes. Did America live up to that ideal? No. No, of course not. But it's a great ideal because it's a great goal. Even if we never reach it, the fact that it's there always acts as a gadfly to this country. As Socrates said, he wanted to be a gadfly to Athens. He wanted to fight Athens to keep it going in the right direction. Of course, they killed him as a result of that. But as Martin Luther King said in his famous I Have a Dream speech, we remember the I Have a Dream speech. As Martin Luther King said in the I Have a Dream speech, we remember the second part of the speech, I Have a Dream part, but the first part of the speech, he referenced the Declaration of Independence. He said, when the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note of which every American was to fall heir. The note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on the note insofar as the citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. Now look at our seven UU principles. The first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Could find that in what Jefferson wrote. The second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Celebrating the fourth can be a UU thing. Will we ever get there? Well, probably not. Will progress be a straight line? No. Will we go backwards at times? Yes. But I'll say this. If this is where you want to go, is it better to be here or here? You may never get here. Perfection is not of this world. But if you keep that in mind, I recall when the Obergefell, the decision came down legalizing marriage equality, that people were quoting the Declaration of Independence. and they were flying American flags outside the Supreme Court because they were saying, this is what we're coming back to, this idea. So, if you are upset about certain things, if you feel things should be changed, we can always point to that. As Lincoln said, even in his debates with Stephen Douglas, he doesn't want to talk about the Declaration because it's there as a monument to us. Those words, Jefferson's greatest achievement. So, happy birthday, America. Hopefully, we can do our part to make America live like Jefferson said we should. Thank you.
As Mike was speaking, it reminded me of a quote, and I can say it almost verbatim. It says, ideals are like stars. We may never reach them, but like a ship on the waters, we can chart our course by them. And I think that's kind of the gist of Mike's message today, right? As in each service, we leave time for those of us experiencing a joy, raising our spirits up, or a sorrow, weighing our spirits down, to bring that joy or sorrow to the light of this faith community. So give you a brief musical interlude here to collect your thoughts, if you would like to share. And after which, the mic will be open here for those of us in the sanctuary. And after that, John Sarah will instruct those online how they can participate in matters of the heart. never sure necessarily what our speaker is going to say when I'm trying to assist in worship, but I think that what I said at the beginning and what we're going to close with now, I think, perfectly bookends Mike's message. We're going to close our services today with a benediction by Reverend Andrea Hawkins Camper. She's editor-in-chief of Soulfire, a digital Unitarian Universalist ministry. May we see all as it is, and may it all be as we see it. May we be the ones to make it as it should be. For if not us, who? If not now, when? This is answering the cry of justice with the work of peace. This is redeeming the pain of history with the grace of wisdom. This is the work we are called to do, and this is the call we answer now. To be the barrier and the bridge, to be the living embodiment of our principles, to be about the work of building the beloved community, to be a people of intention and a people of conscience. And I extinguish our chalice now, but not the light of liberty, the flame of liberty and justice, which burns within us and which we aspire to keep burning in the world. Well, now please join in singing our closing song. The words will be on slides appearing on the screen behind me and on your computer screen. And even if you just choose to listen to the verses, please join in singing the chorus. We all know the words. Let's never forget them or the spirit of we the people, which inspired this song, and work to ensure that, since you've brought up Lincoln, this nation will have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. So let's sing Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. Pete Seeger will lead us. Pete and Woody traveled the country in the 40s, back and forth many times, performing for audiences everywhere, including union halls. And then, of course, stick around afterwards, if you can, for announcements and for a wonderful version of America the Beautiful by none other than Ray Charles. So,
as I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is yours. Footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, while all around me a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. Came shining, and I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me.
This land is